deal for you, right?
Yeah,
we have some.
House Committee on Revenue for March 4th, 2009 will come to order. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2700.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, you heard a similar bill a couple of weeks ago. It was House Bill 2561. It was a more of a local solution, but this one is more geared to or more of a global solution. As a way of background, exemptions of property taxes for certain qualified properties are discussed in an ORS 307040 to 307875. In particular, ORS 307166, Section 1 lists conditions under which property tax exemption applies. When a property tax exempt institution, organization, or public body leases or is granted the use of properties from another property tax exempt institution, organization, or public body, the lessee or entity in possession is required to file claims for exemption with the county assessor following the filing deadline specified in the statute. Now, ORS 307162 spells out filing requirement for property tax exemption for various eligible entities, late application procedure, and late filing fee. So by creating some new revisions and amending various clauses, this bill extends deadline for claiming property tax exemption by certain public and other exempt entities. And it permits retroactive claims, and it applies to prospective claims for exemption for tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2009, and retroactive claims for exemption for tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2004, and before July 1, 2009. This bill takes effect on 91st day following adjournment, sine die. If it passes.
Thank you. Representative Berger, you changed seats.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Vicki Berger, State Rep, District 20, I have brought my A-team with me. If I may explain this bill, it comes out of constituent concerns that came to me in the interim with small, it actually happened twice in my district. The first time I said, well, this is just a one time. The second time I said, well, maybe I better look deeper. These are small churches that have no or only part-time paid staff and depend on volunteers to make filings, and they bought property. They didn't get it filed for their exemption in a timely manner, and all of a sudden they're left with a year's worth of property taxes. And what I discovered in looking at it, that there's not a lot of wiggle room for county assessment in this thing, but there's really no clear sort of glide path for them either. And I went to John Phillips on my right here with the Department of Revenue, and he worked with my assessor, Richard Kreitzer, and we kind of came together to decide to come up with sort of a uniform glide path for this throughout the state for assessors to help them sort of get a way of dealing with these kinds of things that is fair, gives these churches and small nonprofits a little more time if they come forward, if they've missed a big deadline. There's always deadlines. Nothing is, it doesn't give them a wide open, but it gives them a little more help. And I hope sort of clarifies the law for all concerned. That's our goal. I'll let John Phillips describe what the bill does to you and entertain any questions. And you can hear from my assessor on his perspective on it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips at the Oregon Department of Revenue. Thank you. Yes, I appreciate the opportunity to work on some of the technical issues with the Representative Berger, because this particular statute, set of statutes, is pretty complicated, and it's nice to be able to have a bill that we can administrate once it passes, if it does. This particular bill deals with three three sections of law that provide for filing applications for exemptions. So, you know, under Oregon law, all property is assumed to be taxable except unless you've determined that it's not. And the criteria that you establish, the assessor needs to know whether a property owner and the property itself qualifies for the exemption, and so there's a filing process. These three statutes in sections 1, 2, and 3 provide the filing application requirements under a plethora of scenarios: taxable owner, exempt use, exempt owner, exempt use, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why we have so many statutes involved here. There are deadlines for filing so that the assessor can actually finish the roll and calculate the taxes and distribute the money to the taxing districts like schools and those that are relying on them. So there's some certainty to the process. And in many cases, the entity just has to file an application and say, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing with the property, this is what the legislature said I should not have to pay taxes for doing, and that's it. And there's always people in the deadline, and so we have the bill. There's a deadline, there's a late filing deadline, and now this bill would provide just a little bit of a window beyond the late filing deadline for certain extreme scenarios. So that's what the bill tries to do. You'll see in Section 2 what's being added. Excuse me. What's being added in the middle of page 3 there are three scenarios. The first one is the person that missed this deadline is a public entity, okay, like the Lane Transit Community, let's say, or thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Which you heard about in earlier testimony in another bill. So a public entity that's using property that deserves an exemption, but it just isn't in the routine of filing applications. It doesn't know. It's a public entity. It's a state or it's a county. A second scenario is where the person is a first-time filer, and we just made up a definition for first-time filer that says, I've never filed on this property before. In the case of Representative Berger's two churches, they moved to a new property. They hadn't been filing every year because they weren't required to file every year. They file one time, and that's good as long as they're on that property, using that property for the purposes provided in the statute. The situation was they moved to a new property, and they didn't file. The first-time filer provision added something that the Marion County Assessor's Office says is really important. When they are aware that a church moves to a new property and they say, oh, we know that's true, so we'll send them a notice saying, oh, by the way, you need to file, then this extended period won't apply to them because they got a special notice. Marion County, for example, and other counties make extra effort to let people know because they want the system to work right. And so it's kind of more focused on the bad actors not getting the benefit, but the good actors getting the benefit. At least that's the way we tried to design it. And the third one is for good and sufficient cause. And this is a term that's used in statute in various places and defined elsewhere. But we define it again here as being something that it's an extraordinary circumstance beyond the control of the taxpayer, and that gives them the opportunity. They still file. They still pay a late filing fee. And it just gives them an extra 4 months. So that's kind of the focus of what this bill does. And then Section 4 provides for a sort of a retrospective opportunity or window for entities that got caught up in this for certain periods. And I think Representative Berg can speak to that. I hope that's helpful.
We don't know retroactively, Section 4, what the fiscal is. If it's significant, I'm willing to amend it out. But there, that's sort of what I'd like to look at and see if we could help a few of these folks. If it's a big number, of course, we're not in a position, and nor are the counties. So, but going forward, I would like the bill to stand because it does give sort of a glide path and sort of clarify some things for the assessors. So that's Section 4.
Okay. Good morning, Kara Barnhart, members of the committee. Me too. For the record, my name is Richard Kreitzer. I'm the Marion County Assessor and Tax Collector. And I just want to say I appreciate the opportunity to work with Representative Berger also on this issue. And I'm going to make this real brief and pretty general, but I think this is a good bill. At Marion County, we try to process to make processes such as this as easy as possible for the taxpayer while trying to do the right thing. And this bill does that. Sometimes people end up in difficult situations meeting deadlines for various reasons, and I've run across that in the last couple years. This bill helps address some of those reasons, and this bill also helps balance those needs and the needs for the information to be provided to the assessor by exempt organizations. As I said, I was going to be very brief, so thank you for giving me this opportunity to be here.
Thank you very much. Questions? Yes, Representative Brune.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for the department. As I understand it, there were quite a few Portland area Catholic churches that sort of fell, they got caught behind the eight ball on this, and I think the reason for that was, is Roger going to testify on it? I think the reason for that was some of the legal issues that the main church was having, and they sort of pushed down some of this responsibility of the churches that had never done that before. Would this bill take care of that issue with those churches, in your estimation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brune, this bill, as I read it, does not take care of that situation for the majority of the transactions that occurred with that church you're referring to.
Is that because it doesn't go back far enough, or why wouldn't it take care of those churches?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brune, it wouldn't take care of those churches transactions, the majority that I'm thinking about, because that particular entity filed late, but they filed before this extended time frame in this bill. They actually filed under the current statute by December 31st. So they met the current statute's late filing time frame. They were required then, of course, when you're in that situation, you have to pay a late filing fee. So for the majority of those cases, they paid the fee. They became exempt. Had they filed timely, they wouldn't have had a fee. So they were caught in the situation, do I file late, pay the fee, or do I not do either and hope I can get a bill next session? And I think the majority of the cases, they said, well, we're gonna file and pay the fee. Now, this bill doesn't address that particular situation.
Well, I'm sort of caught because it seems to me, and I don't want to misconstrue this, but it sort of seems to me that they did the right thing when they discovered there was an error, and potentially with this bill, which is seeking to remedy some of these similar problems, they're going to be punished for doing the right thing.
Mr. Chair, if I could speak to this, and I hope that Roger Martin will come and speak for the diocese.
He's signed up, and we will expect to hear from him.
We originally had two bills, one this bill, and then a separate one that was more focused on that particular issue. I am moving forward with this bill, and Mr. Martin can speak to the issues. For me, it was more about the fiscal than anything, and what I'm most interested in is moving forward, having a clear picture, than looking back and cleaning up all of those bills. And I also, in this bill, am more focused on the smaller entities that may not have staff to be keeping track of this kind of thing. I'm more focused in this bill on the small entities that probably don't have paid staff to keep track of filings. A volunteer gets sick. This is what happened to my church in the first place, and something was missed. Not unsympathetic to the Catholic Church's issues in here, and I have invited Roger Martin to be here, and I hope he will speak more directly to what they need. I'm trying to keep this very narrowly focused and with low fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
Can I speak?
Please.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Brune, I think after I finished answering, I thought of another way to answer the same question. And then I have a comment. When I said this bill doesn't address that situation, what I meant was this bill won't retroactively fix their situation. But had this bill been in place, then it would have offered an opportunity for them to pay less of a filing fee. This bill still requires a late filing fee, but they would have fallen under, I believe, the first-time filer definition because they hadn't filed on those properties before by that owner. Because in the case that you're referring to, there was one owner, and then the ownership was disseminated statewide. Okay, so I think the answer is no, it doesn't help them retroactively. Yes, it would in the future had this same scenario happened.
Correct.
My comment, if I might, or would you like to follow up with that?
Well, I'm just making sure I understand what we're talking about. This is a situation where the Archdiocese was considered the owner of all these properties at one time, and then later the parishes formed their own corporations and were considered the owners separately. That's what we're talking about,
yes.
Isn't it? Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to find out about.
Okay.
Then you had a comment.
Okay, and my comment was that the department doesn't support this bill addressing that situation or anybody's situation in particular, or going back in time or not going back in time. Our involvement was strictly to make sure that whatever policy that Representative Berger was seeking would work. So I don't want to get caught up in whether we support a particular policy or not. I hope that clarifies that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions for this panel? Thank you. We have Chris Schultz and Roger Martin. And Representative Beyer, did you want to be heard?
Yeah.
Why don't you come first, and then we'll hear from the other two. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Committee. As you remember, I've been here before somewhat on the similar issue, House Bill 2561, which was purely government to government, and it was supposed to have the same remedy, but it did have a retroactive piece in it for my park district and for LTD. I did sit in on the original discussions with Representative Berger's group. At the time, I like the proposal. It made me a little nervous to think about bringing all the religious organizations in, so I opted to go ahead and do a bill that just dealt with the government-to-government issues. So I just wanted to make sure that that you remember that I was here, that this bill has been up before in a little bit different form, but still looking for the possibility. While we'd love to have the look back period on it, I think what's really important is a way to look at the problems so that local governments, in my mind, don't face this again, that there's somewhat of a remedy. When I did ask for the bill to be drafted, I asked for the same bill, but just the government-to-government leases. What I discovered was the filing fee for this was left off. And we do have amendments on our bill to take care of that. But with that, I thank you for listening to me, and hopefully you'll consider this bill or my bill. So,
thank you, Representative. This bill is then a superset of the bill that you that we heard earlier.
Yes.
Your bill is essentially subsumed into this one.
Yes.
If this one were adopted, it would take care of the issue you were raising.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I represent the Oregon Catholic Conference. That's the Archdiocese of Portland, which is Western Oregon, and the Baker Diocese, which is east of the Cascades. I support the bill and urge you to pass it. Let me just give you a brief background. The Catholic Church, as anybody that's ever read a newspaper remembers, went through bankruptcy 2 years ago because of the huge legal problems surrounding the priest abuse issue, which was a real issue and for which the church was found guilty in court and has paid millions of dollars in settlement. The result of that was a bankruptcy by the entire diocese, which went into federal bankruptcy court. And in the argument and the settlement that came out of that court, the diocese was no longer the owner of individual churches, and the ownership, the legal ownership, was passed to the individual churches. To give you an example, I belong to St. Patrick's Parish in Northwest Portland. It's the oldest Catholic, it's the oldest church of any kind in the city of Portland. For 120 years, and we are celebrating our 120th anniversary, first stones were laid on St. Patrick's Day in 1889. For 120 years, it's been property tax exempt. Multnomah County has, along with all the other parishes in Multnomah County, has collected $185,000 in late filing fees for property they never, ever were able to tax before. I resent that. Nothing, I guess, I can do about it. If you would consider legislation, I would be happy to urge you to pass legislation to pay all or part of that back. Collectively, statewide, the church paid over $300,000 in late filing fees. Now, Representative Berger mentioned small churches with minor staff. That's really describes St. Patrick's Parish, for instance, has a part-time bookkeeper who takes care of the Sunday collections, makes sure they're deposited correctly, had no concept about property tax exemptions, and he, along with every other parish, were caught late penalty and fined, and we collectively paid those on September 1st under protest. I don't think our protest did any good. What does gall me right now is that there are county assessors in this state who are currently trying to go after the church personal property and are harassing, and that's my term, that wouldn't be theirs, harassing individual churches if they haven't filed personal property tax exemption for computers, other machinery like that. You know, this issue of taxing churches has been well argued in this body. Former Speaker of the House, Vera Katz, put legislation in two sessions 30-plus years ago attempting to tax churches, and we debated that at great length and overwhelmingly endorsed the idea that churches were property tax exempt in this state. We got a new series of assessors in some counties, apparently, and think that's prime game to go after them. I don't know how you establish a policy, but it bugs me because I'm here to tell you that all the churches do good, and in the case of the Catholic Church, we're educating over 10,000 students in the state of Oregon at no cost to the state whatsoever. That's taken off your obligation and our state taxpayers' obligation. And I resent the fact that they're going to try to go after and tax their computers for doing that. So I urge you to pass this bill, and if you tell me, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to support legislation to get some of that money back.
Thank you, Mr. Mark.
Yes. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Chris Schultz, here today representing the Lane Transit District. As Representative Beyer mentioned a few weeks ago, this committee considered House Bill 2561, which dealt with a specific issue relating to Lane Transit District and a Willamette Lane Park District. From Lane Transit District's perspective, this is an unnecessarily punitive statute because the way it operates is if the local government fails to file the proper forms, the full amount of the penalty is the full amount of taxes are owed. Representative Berger's bill, House Bill 2700, provides, we think, a more fair remedy where you pay a penalty for failing to file the forms, but the penalty is administrative and covers the assessor's costs. It isn't the full amount of taxes owed. I'd like to call your attention to one provision, which is if this committee elects to pursue House Bill 2700 and set aside House Bill 2561, the look-back period provided in Representative Berger's bill begins July 1, 2004. The look-back period in the House Bill 2561 begins July 1, 2001. So without an amendment, if House Bill 2700 moved forward, it would only cover part of Willamette Lane and LTD's five-year look-back period. Just wanted to bring that to the committee's attention. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? I don't see any. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2700? I don't see anyone, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2700. And if I can find my agenda, we'll open the next one. There it is. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2616. Day, is that yours, too?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently, cigarette taxes imposed by ORS 323-005 to 323-482 and tobacco product taxes imposed by ORS 323505 are in lieu of all other state, county, and municipal taxes on sale or use of cigarettes and tobacco products. Now, this bill, House Bill 2616, will eliminate these preemption clauses.
And that's all it does, huh? All right.
Mr. Chair, can I give testimony on this?
Representative Call, yes, please.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Nick Call, State Representative from House District 49. I'm giving testimony today because, this is my bill. I promise I'll be brief, and I'm a bit under the weather, so I'm straining a bit to talk, so hopefully you all can hear me. A few first-order things. This bill represents for me kind of a return to a governmental philosophy that says that local government has an important role to play. I'm a firm believer in the fact that the issues facing my community, the concerns that we face where I live, that the answers to those concerns don't all have to come from Salem. And to the extent that local government can address those concerns, the solutions might actually be more appropriate and more apt to the challenges we face as a community where I live. And I believe that that's the case all around the state, that each community is differently situated and that they may have different solutions, both on the policy side, what programs they may want to implement, but also on the taxation side, what ways might they decide to generate revenue that are different than what the state of Oregon as a whole, what this body may choose to do. And I think that philosophy drives from a kind of a first order my thinking in this bill, that this preemption, like many other preemptions, should be removed so that local government can choose for itself what programs it wants to fund and the mechanisms by which it will raise funds to fund those programs. I think that this is particularly true in the economic times that we face right now. The concerns, the problems, the calamity that many of our cities and counties are facing right now, those are not going to be solved simply by acts of this body. We are not going to be able to act to hold harmless our cities and counties in much the same way we were most likely not going to be able to act to hold harmless our state governmental programs. And to the extent that the philosophical idea that drives this bill as a first-order principle, I think that is further reinforced by the economic situations we face now. We need to give our counties and our cities, our local governments, the ability to dig themselves out of this hole. And I think that this is an important first step in that regard. What is interesting about the tobacco tax and about the capacity for a local government to implement the tobacco tax is that it not only allows them to choose their own destiny, as it were, with regards to how they choose to tax themselves, but there are public health implications that surround a tobacco tax, such that a county might be able to, in one fell swoop, choose not only to raise its own revenue, but also choose to, in making that decision, try to limit the amount of people who smoke in their community and specifically deter children from starting to smoke. Because we know that the product tobacco may be more inelastic than other products in the marketplace, when we were talking about children, the elasticity of the commodity tobacco increases, and such that when the price increases, children forego picking up the habit. And so we have here the capacity in this measure to allow counties and cities to kind of take control of their own destiny on two fronts. One front, which is to allow them to raise revenue for themselves, to get themselves out of the deep hole that they're in, but also to decide that they would like to use this policy measure as well to make their communities more healthy and to make these communities more healthy and make their children more healthy as well. And to the extent that we can do that by simply removing the handcuffs, by saying, have at it, do for yourselves that which we apparently are unwilling to do, I think that we have a very easy choice here. I'd like to just briefly close by telling you about where I live. I live in a community called Rockwood. It is a small community within Gresham on the outskirts of the city of Portland. My community suffers under a 25% poverty rate. Almost an equal number of people live just above the poverty line in that community. The $45 million that's reported to be short in the Multnomah County budget, for example, is going to wreak calamitous ruin upon the lives of those people. We have got to help our local governments have the capacity to help themselves. I believe deep down that if we remove this preemption, that at the very least, and this may be cold comfort for people who don't live in my community, but at the very least, Multnomah County will step forward. The city of Portland may step forward. I hope that there are other counties and cities in this room today that are going to give testimony to talk about their ability to utilize this taxing instrument to raise necessary revenues to hold harmless those communities that so desperately need our help. And I'm happy to take questions or be finished. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Riley.
Thank you. I just want, is there someone who's going to give testimony about how this would be implemented any place? Because the cigarette tax, the way the state implements it, sort of lends it very difficult for local entities to tag on to that. And I just wondered if there's someone who's going to testify about
it. We have panels from various cities.
Okay.
And that might be a great question for direct.
That's all I want to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Kafori, Rachel Banks, Morgan Cowling. Welcome, Commissioner. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deborah Kafori. I'm a Multnomah County Commissioner, and I have with me today Rachel Banks. She's from our Multnomah County Health Department. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2616, and I'd like to thank Representative Call for bringing this bill forward. Multnomah County is the most populated county in the state of Oregon with more than 717 residents. The county provides many important services, including public safety, mental health and addiction treatment, disability services, programs for seniors, and a host of other duties that support the most vulnerable and needy in our community. Like many jurisdictions in Oregon, and like the state, Multnomah County is facing a catastrophic budget shortfall that will result in significant cuts to public safety and human services unless we can raise additional revenue. Our projected shortfall for 2010 is $45 million, which is about 12% of the county budget. In addition, in the governor's recommended budget, it includes deep cuts to human services, which would potentially add another $18 to $20 million in reductions to the county. Deep cuts will be made in order to balance our budget. In real terms, this means slashing programs that are critical to the health and well-being of our community, including gang prevention, community corrections, mental health crisis services, alcohol and drug treatment programs, which will drive more individuals into the criminal justice system and result in more children being placed into an already overburdened foster care system, area agencies on aging and disabilities, school-based health clinics, and the list goes on. As you may know, Multnomah County has very few options for raising revenue. Our primary source of revenue comes from local property taxes, which are limited by the Oregon Constitution to a growth rate of about 3%. Our second largest source of revenue is the business income tax, which continues to decline as the economy weakens. I applaud your willingness to consider House Bill 2616, which will lift the local preemption on tobacco taxes, because it will give local governments, like Multnomah County, another tool to meet the needs of our residents. I urge you to support this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. I also thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. For the record, my name is Rachel Banks, and I'm a policy coordinator with the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program in Multnomah County, or as we like to call it, TPEP. Today I'm here to talk to you briefly about the goals and the value of local tobacco prevention and education programs, as well as the annual cost of tobacco in Multnomah County. The goals of our local TPEP program are to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke, decrease the rate of youth initiation to tobacco, increase access to cessation resources for people who want and are willing to quit, as well as eliminate disparities in tobacco use. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention state that programs achieve greater effectiveness when they utilize multi-component intervention efforts that integrate implementation of programmatic and policy solutions to influence social norms, systems, and networks. Simply put, local TPEP programs are vital in the effort to eliminate the costly effects of tobacco. Each year, tobacco-related deaths account for 22% of all deaths in Multnomah County. That means that tobacco costs 1,229 lives each year in Multnomah County alone. Over 24,000 people suffer from tobacco-related illnesses such as emphysema, lung cancer, and the list goes on and on. In addition to the cost that Multnomah County experiences in lives and disease, the financial implications are also pose an incredible burden. Each year, $193 million is spent on medical care in Multnomah County, and moreover, $206 million is spent in lost productivity in Multnomah County due to tobacco-related deaths. Please take these facts into consideration as you consider House Bill 2616, which will give Multnomah County another tool to meet the needs of our residents. Our local tobacco prevention and education programs need tools to address the cost of tobacco in our county, which totals almost $400 million every year in addition to the cost of lives and disease. Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the policy manager for the Association of Oregon Counties. AOC supports House Bill 2616, and we support options for counties to raise revenue to help themselves. I'll keep my testimony brief this morning. We'd like to thank Representative Call and members of the committee for hearing this bill so early in the session. As you know, and as Commissioner Cafori mentioned, many of our counties are struggling with how to fund important services in their communities and public safety programs as well. House Bill 2616 would be a viable option for some of our counties. However, I would be remiss if I didn't say that I hope this committee still works on statewide revenue-raising measures like the beer tax and the tobacco tax. our counties definitely need more tools in the toolbox to help themselves and to address the needs of their local communities. This would not necessarily be a viable option for all of our counties, especially the smaller, more rural, less populated counties. So it is definitely an important option to have, and we support it, and we encourage you to move this bill along. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Hi, Deborah. I just wanted to kind of repeat my question and see if there's anybody on this panel who can help me out with that. How would that be implemented?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Riley. Truthfully, I don't have the answer of how it would specifically be done. We haven't gotten that far in the process. At this point, we are merely looking for you to free our hands so that we are allowed to explore this along with other alternatives. I mean, we are, just to be honest, just as you are all doing, we are looking under every single rock. We're shaking the couch upside down to find the quarters. We're desperate, and we're looking for any means by which we can help out the most vulnerable in our community.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Thank you. I'm very supportive of this kind of thing. I'm opposed to most preemptions that we do, and I'm just a little concerned about this particular tax because it's so difficult on an individual county basis, I think, to implement. Maybe we can find a way, but I'm probably going to be supportive of this bill. So.
Thank you, Representative Riley. I agree. I mean, it's not, this is not a silver bullet. It's not the end-all, be-all. There's really, you know, if there was an easy solution, we would have probably taken advantage of it already. But as I said, desperate times demand desperate measures. So thank you for your support today.
Thank you, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure, like Representative Riley, which one of, or if you're the right panel or not for this question, but are you aware, any of you, of the original reason for the preemption? Did it grow out of the tobacco litigation, or is there something you could share with us?
Chair, Representative Vance, I would just assume that as with most preemptions, the history is because it's much easier for folks to debate this issue at the state level as opposed to running around to all 36 counties. But I don't have the historical perspective on this one.
And that's something we can certainly look up. Representative Vance?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of a different tack. The amount that you plan on raising, the 700,000 people in the county, do you have some idea of the amount of revenue that you would anticipate from this if you get the lifting of the preemption and then implement the tax?
Thank you, Representative Vance. We have been told by our tax folks at the Multnomah County that each cent of cigarette tax would generate between $345,000 and $375,000. Admittedly, if this goes through and we at Multnomah County choose to do it, there would be people who then choose to go outside of the county to buy their tobacco products. And I understand, and I don't know how that all plays here, but it's a pretty significant amount that we could raise with a high enough tax.
Yes, please.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Has there been a study or something that would reflect the impact that what you might do would have upon what we're trying to do at the state level when it comes to increasing these taxes? In other words, is there some sort of a study that shows us for every penny you add, how much the state loses?
Representative, I don't have the answer to that question. And I would hope that this would not preclude you at the state level from doing the business that you need to do. And I understand if you're looking at raising tobacco taxes, that's great. I applaud those efforts. Just from a we oppose preemptions in any form of time, and any chance that we have to take our matters into our own hands, we appreciate being given that opportunity.
Thank you. Representative Call, and then Representative Springer.
I'll hold off. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to your $345,000 figure to, what, $375,000, what was the tax that you would impose to get to that figure?
Chair, Representative Springer, that was one penny.
Okay.
Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Thank you very much, and thank you for coming down today up today. We're a little bit higher elevation here than Portland. Dr. Hedberg and Alejandro Quero.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to testify primarily about the public health impact of tobacco use. For the record, I'm Katrina Hedberg, and I'm the interim state epidemiologist for the Department of Human Services. DHS is dedicated to reducing the number of tobacco-related illnesses and deaths in our state. Its tobacco use is the leading cause of preventable death and disability. Each year in Oregon, there's around 7,000 tobacco-related deaths and 800 due to secondhand smoke. There are also $1 billion of direct costs in medical spending for tobacco-related illness, so it has a huge negative impact. For treating tobacco-related diseases, obviously lung cancer you know about, heart disease, asthma, emphysema, and low birth weight babies as well. So it has a huge economic impact just on the medical cost. And the state pays a disproportionate a share of this cost because in the Oregon Health Plan, the prevalence of smokers is about twice that. It's around 36% compared to the general population of Oregon, where the prevalence is now at 18%. Increasing the price of tobacco is a proven strategy to decrease both consumption among current smokers, but also initiation of youth. And the Federal Centers for Disease Control says that for every 10% increase in the price of tobacco, we have a 4% decline in consumption overall and a 6% decline among youth. In Oregon, we implemented a significant cigarette tax back in 1996, and since then, cigarette consumption has dropped about 41%, which is equivalent to 26 billion fewer cigarettes sold in 2006. That's in 1 year compared to 1996. So increasing the cost is effective in decreasing consumption. Local tobacco taxes are common across the country. New York City, Chicago, Anchorage, Alaska all have local tax. And allowing local local jurisdictions to increase tax or do tobacco control is really effective. We find that a lot of the tobacco, you've heard from Multnomah County, but the tobacco prevention and education program that's done at the local level, and we talk about comprehensive programs that do a variety of things from media campaigns to school programs to our quit line, et cetera, are really very effective, and a lot of that needs to be implemented at the local level. So, again, consumption decreases with increasing cost, and since between 1996, when we first increased the cost of tobacco in Oregon through tax, to 2006, we would have saved, or we have, over 2,800 lives and over $875 million if we're able to maintain that decrease in consumption that we've seen. So that's my testimony, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alejandro Queral. I'm the State Director of Government Affairs for the American Heart Association. We fully support HB 2616, and on behalf of our members, I urge you to vote in favor of this bill. As the legislature considers a variety of bills dealing with tobacco, it is essential that we understand the exorbitant cost of tobacco use to the public, both in terms of their health and well-being and in economic terms. You know that tobacco kills. In fact, tobacco alone is responsible for more annual deaths than deaths caused by poor diet and lack of exercise, alcohol, vehicular accidents, firearms, toxic and microbial agents, sexual behavior, and illegal drug use combined. Nearly a quarter of all deaths in the state, about 22%, are attributable to tobacco use each year. This translates to 18 deaths every day that are in some way caused by tobacco use. Even non-smokers are affected, as nearly 800 Oregonians die every year as a consequence of secondhand smoke. So let me be clear. Tobacco kills. Tobacco is also expensive for the state. The total annual economic cost for Oregon due to tobacco use amounts to $2.2 billion every single year. The Oregon Health Plan spends $287 million each year in tobacco-related illnesses. The cost of treating tobacco-related illnesses is so high that current cigarette tax revenues would not be able to pay for such costs. Now, a pack of cigarettes currently sells for about $4.20. If we were to add the cost associated with smoking to each pack of cigarettes, the price per pack would increase to about $11. In other words, Oregon has been subsidizing smoking. We know that if we include this cost to the pack of cigarettes, the retail price would increase by about $7. We also know that an increase of this magnitude would encourage many current smokers to quit. And why? Research has shown that about 10% increase in the retail price reduces youth smoking rates by about 6%, adult rates by 2%, and total consumption by about 4%. HB 2616 would give local jurisdictions the power to reduce cigarette consumption by raising the retail price of a pack of cigarettes. So even a 60-cent increase, for instance, would not only bring a much-needed increase in revenue, it would also reduce smoking rates among youth by more than 8%, and more than 9,000 current Oregon smokers would quit. In addition to the revenue generated by the tax itself, Oregonians would save because of reduced needs for medical care and fewer deaths caused by tobacco use. If the legislature fails to act on this matter, we would not only continue to pay for tobacco-related illnesses when we don't have to, we could also be facing cuts to Oregon's Tobacco Prevention and Education Program, or TPEP as is affectionately known. We know TPEP is effective at reducing smoking rates. In fact, when the Tobacco Prevention Program was defunded in 2004, smoking rates among pregnant women increased. And even an increase in smoking rates of 1% would translate to more than 28,000 new adult smokers and 2,000 more high school smokers every year. Adult deaths caused by smoking would increase by more than 7,000, and nearly 3,000 youth would grow up to die from smoking. Not surprisingly, the incidence of heart attacks and strokes would also increase, resulting in greater demand for expensive medical procedures that contribute to the skyrocketing costs of health insurance. In fact, over a five-year period, health costs from more heart attacks and strokes would add up to more than $11 million. In short, the American Heart Association supports increasing tobacco taxes, whether it's at the state or at the local level, because of the positive health outcomes for individuals and the public and the significant savings to the taxpayer due to avoided medical costs and premature death. We urge you to vote in favor of HB 2616. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Call.
Yes, thank you. And thank you very much for your testimony, especially the fact that local government can actually effectuate the policy goals of reducing consumption and tobacco use through a local taxing option. That's very helpful, I think, to the discussion. I want to ask the obverse of Representative Bence's question, you know, the kind of bizarro world version of that question, which is to say that if the state of Oregon is going to lose money by a tobacco tax increase in Multnomah County, there's another way of framing that question, which is to say that people are going to quit smoking in Multnomah County when they raise the tax, and therefore the state of Oregon is going to lose money. And so would it be fair to say that right now, if that was an impediment, if that thinking that we were going to lose money actually stopped us from moving forward, the state of Oregon would be making revenue on the negative health consequences of behaviors of people living in Multnomah County? I mean, is that a fair way of putting that question in the opposite?
You don't have to answer that one if you don't want to.
But you might not, but Alejandro may.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think, you know, I'm here as a public health physician.
Yes.
And what we know is that the cost that is spent for a pack of cigarettes, the economic costs of treating tobacco-related illness far exceed that. Now, I'm not an economist, and as you know, I do work for the state and for the governor, so I'm really here to address kind of tobacco use in general, so I can't answer specific in one, but this tobacco, the TPEP program is saving money even when money gets put into a program, if you will.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Call, thanks for the question. I think that is a very important question because ultimately what we're trying to do here is reduce smoking. I understand and we all understand the economic implications of raising tobacco tax and the potential use of revenue. But ultimately what we're trying to do is reduce smoking. And so allowing local jurisdictions to increase the tobacco tax will ultimately help us reduce smoking and save us a lot of money, as the testimony made clear.
Thank you. Let me say first, I really appreciate that the state epidemiologist is here. Your predecessor testified in front of the Health Committee in 2001 when I was on that committee on the issue of tobacco use prevention. Unfortunately, the legislature at that time chose to reduce tobacco use prevention, and I noticed from looking at some of the charts from Multnomah County that youth smoking, which had been declining before that time, actually leveled off and looks like it's beginning to increase a little bit in Multnomah County, and that's worrisome, especially if it reflects what's actually happening in the rest of the state. I would personally be ecstatic if we stopped collecting any money from a tobacco tax because nobody smoked anymore. Or used other tobacco products. That would be a wonderful outcome. And we'd figure out some other way to fund the programs that we now fund there. And if your testimony is accurate, and I suspect it is, we would still save money on the Oregon Health Plan, even without that revenue, given that we're spending more funds to deal with the health problems of tobacco users than we receive in tobacco taxes. Anything else with this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. The cities, Michael Novak and Trevor Steele.
Morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Michael Novak with the League of Oregon Cities. As you know, we represent all the cities in the state of Oregon, and principal to those cities is retaining local control in the local decision-making process. To that, I'm here to express the League of Oregon Cities' support of House Bill 2616 and thank Representative Call for introducing the measure. House Bill 2616 grants local government greater authority in their revenue-raising abilities by rescinding the preemption on imposing taxes on cigarette and tobacco products. Now, this is a vital tool local governments haven't had access to in decades. Instead, the cigarette tax is part of the state shared revenue system imposed by the state with a percentage dedicated to local governments. Now, Oregon's first cigarette tax was passed by a vote of the people in the 1960s. That measure dedicated 25% for cities and another 25% for counties. Now, this cigarette tax actually failed on the ballot six times previously before it was passed, only after the local dedication was then added to the measure. Now, the ballot explanation stated the cigarette tax, quote, would be an additional source of revenue for cities and counties. And a city's share was considered compensation for preempting local government's authority to tax tobacco products. And a city's portion a cigarette tax helps fund critical basic services in large and certainly small cities. Now, local government city cigarette tax percentage has decreased substantially since the measure was originally passed. Originally, as I said, it was 25%. Now it is just over 1.5%. Now, these times are hard, and cities are facing their own fiscal crisis, and last month's economic forecast made it clear that things are going to get worse before they get better. As cities in Oregon are experiencing budgetary shortfalls in nearly every aspect of revenue. Revenues from property taxes are down and continue to drop. Revenues from local fees are down. Now, these funding gaps are going to continue to expand unless other options are found. And cities are making deep cuts in public safety, in their workforce, fire protection, and other public services. And removing the cigarette tax preemption for local governments gives cities an important tool to meet local community demands. We support the bill. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Steele.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. And first of all, the City of Eugene would like to thank Representative Call for bringing this bill forward. This bill, the City views for the record, Trevor Steele, City of Eugene. For the record, the City views this as an additional tool to used in light of seriously declining revenues. Right now, the city is facing about an $8 million budget shortfall. And so we really view this as a tool that we could use if the city council opted and the legislature passed this bill. And the city council opted to go ahead and use this mechanism to supplement and to add into the city's revenue so we can continue to provide the services that we need to provide, such as the police, the fire, roads, and all these other services that the citizens have come to expect. So we know this isn't the only tool out there, but this is an important tool for us to meet the needs of our citizens.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Vance.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I'm just interested in the impact that you folks think that imposing a tax at the city level would have upon the state's revenue stream. Have you in access to any studies that would reflect what you might do to what we are anticipating receiving as a result of imposing a tax?
Well, specific to Oregon cities, you know, every city is different, large and small, and as was stated before, just like the counties, the cities support removing all preemptions to give cities tools to make the right decisions. As far as specific measures, I'm not aware of what specific cities are working on and what they might be implementing. But I could do some more poking around and bring that to the committee.
Yes, please.
I probably should have asked this of the last panel because I think the study from the American Heart Association shows an increase in 10% reduces consumption by 4%. And the argument we've heard is that we will, at the state level, benefit because there'll be fewer people smoking, thus less illness and sickness and other expenses. Is that your thought?
Personally, I certainly would. Personally, I would support something like that. My father was a smoker his entire life, and there were some serious impacts. I think, though, that in relation to this bill, as some of the programs that were outlined that the counties and the cities and the other organizations are involved with, I think those programs are very beneficial to the communities, and I would certainly like to see those continue.
Yes, please.
One final follow-up. To carry to its extreme, I suppose, the city of Portland, which could raise the price of cigarettes to a point where it drives everybody into Washington to buy the cigarettes. But thus, we have both still the bill to pay, but nobody buying the cigarettes in Oregon. How would the state manage to avoid that kind of unfortunate result?
The state itself?
Yes.
Well, I think the state has... I think that there's not as much a loss of revenue as is bantied about. That does happen. I do know that when Washington State implemented a program impacting their cigarette sales or possibly their alcohol sales, there was that measure that they there was that concern that they faced, and for a short time that did take place. However, that revenue stream did go back to similar to what it was before.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Sean Miller, Chris Gerard, Richard Kosasan.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association. Appreciate the opportunity to testify. And although I'm not here today to advocate for a particular tobacco tax, I know you're going to have several regarding on the statewide level and in this bill, the local level. But we are here today in opposition to House Bill 2616 because we do believe the debate needs to occur at the state level and continue to occur at the state level. On the prior panels, we've heard, I think, a couple different themes. One of them is local governments, cities, counties want the ability to generate revenue, and I can understand that in these financial times. We also heard from others that of the public health benefit of reducing consumption as you raise that tax, and I also appreciate that that particular argument. However, they do contradict one another, and there is implications, I think, policy decisions that this committee needs to make. In generating revenue and reducing consumption, I think you can look at, I think the only state closest to us would be the state of Alaska, and it was mentioned on a prior panel that Anchorage has local and countywide. Up there, they're called boroughs, and many of the cities, counties, boroughs, do have their own local taxes along with the state tax and the federal tax. The state of Alaska has reduced their consumption quite a bit, and what I've been reading about Alaska is that the local governments, and this has been going on throughout the late 80s and in the entire 90s as they continue to raise their local taxes, county borough taxes, and state taxes. And what I've read is that a lot of these municipalities have forced to look elsewhere for dependable income. And so obviously the argument of consumption is valid, I think, in the state of Alaska. Some of the arguments I think Representative Benz brought up regarding the implications to the state. I think we will have implications to the revenues of the state if you put forth. We don't know what cities or counties may do, but based on what other states have done, when you consider the city of Portland, Multnomah County, other surrounding counties, there is going to be implications or lost revenue to the state, and I think. I think one of the biggest implications, and I don't know the answer to this, Mr. Chairman, but what are those implications to I think the primary funding source of the tobacco tax at the state level, and that's the Oregon Health Plan. And I think you've all kind of kicked that around already in some of the discussion I've heard, and I think that's what needs to be. And I don't know the answer to the study, but I do believe when you do start stacking local county taxes on top of our state tax, there will be a reduction to the state, and I think that just needs to be considered as a policy discussion. That's why we believe, I think, any discussion on tobacco, changes in tobacco tax need to be addressed at the state level. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairman Barnhart, committee members.
For the record, my name is Chris Gerard, and I'm president and CEO of Plaid Pantries, Inc. Plaid is an Oregon corporation. We operate 95 stores in the state of Oregon and a few in Washington. We operate primarily in the Tri-County Portland area, metro area, and in Salem. We employ about 650 Oregon citizens, provide a wide range of employment benefits, including health insurance, for our mostly full-time employees. Tobacco, as you might guess, is a large percentage of our company's revenues and profits. In less than a month, we're going to be absorbing a large federal excise tax increase on cigarettes, $6 a carton. Additional cigarette taxes, of course, are being contemplated by the state of Oregon at this time. House Bill 2616 is now proposing that cities, counties, and other municipalities be allowed to levy their own taxes against this already strained product category. This is a significant departure from past practices, as was discussed. It's harmful to consumers, it's harmful to businesses, and it's harmful to the state of Oregon itself. We're opposed to this bill for the following reasons. Local tobacco taxes would harm some retailers and benefit others. Allowing local taxes on tobacco products would substantially disrupt the marketplace, unfairly harming certain retailers while inequitably benefiting others. A city tax on tobacco, for example, would drive consumers to purchase tobacco products from stores just across the city limits. Retailers outside the city limits would benefit, while retailers inside the city limits would suffer. Local tobacco taxes would also reduce the state's revenue, as many of you have already deduced. Increasing the price reduces demand, which has been discussed, 4 for 10. One piece of that, remember, when you increase the taxes incrementally and lose those units, you're also losing the tax that you're already collecting. So you're getting a much bigger bang against you for the buck. Local tobacco taxes will therefore reduce the quantity of tax products sold in the state of Oregon and reduce the revenue that would otherwise be received. Tobacco, as you know, is already a declining source of revenue, and this proposed law would definitely accelerate that decline. Local tobacco taxes, I'm sorry Representative Riley had to leave, would lead to significant enforcement and administrative problems. The Oregon Department of Revenue doesn't have the authority to furnish tax stamps, and they wouldn't because they wouldn't be collecting the tax. And the states and counties, the counties and cities are not equipped to do so. They don't have the resources to ensure compliance, and the Oregon Department of Revenue couldn't or shouldn't do that to benefit a local government while reducing, and most importantly, the state's going to lose control of a very fragile, large revenue stream. Again, to Representative Riley's question, it's an administrative nightmare for distributors and retailers. Local taxes, how is the distributor going to, what are the mechanics of collecting that tax? We'd have different tax stamps, I suppose. Some retailers could buy wholesale product in a low-taxed city or county, unless there were tax stamps on it, so I don't know how all that would work. Local taxes would promote increased tax evasion. We already have tax evasion. This would increase that in disregard for the law. I'm requesting that you not act on this bill and retain the sole taxing authority with the state of Oregon. To a couple comments, Representative Call, you and others have made this argument, and it was emphasized here. Smoking cessation and reduction is a good social goal, but you can't have it both ways with this revenue stream. So you can raise the tax, and maybe you'll get an initial pop, but you can look at what's happened in the past, and we usually have underestimated the effect of it. The revenues are going to go down. And we're right on the cusp, I believe, of with the federal tax and with the state tax that may come out. And certainly if we allow counties and cities to tax, you're going to get less revenue to gross dollars of tax because there are other avenues to evade the tax. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, Richard Kosasan with the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association.
following up Mr. Miller and Mr. Gerard's comments, one, I think you inherently create a major problem in terms of any kind of statewide enforcement with this. I would encourage the committee to revisit the provisions in terms of prepayment of a cigarette tax. In terms of the actual tax prepaid by the distributor, and the requirements to affix a tax stamp to a pack. With this authority vested with cities and counties, theoretically, cities and counties alone, you could end up with a pack of cigarettes with about 278 different stamps on that pack. One, I don't think they'd fit, but two, just the administration would be, I think, nearly impossible. I think also what that does, it encourages behavior of tax evasion. There's been comments specifically with respect to the Oregon Health Plan. For a perspective, in 1993, tax was imposed a dime a pack, $1 a carton, for funding of the Oregon Health Plan. It was expressly noted that in 1993 it was bridge financing for the Oregon Health Plan. One time only. Well, it was actually to the dismay of some and the surprise of others, it was renewed in 95. And they renewed it in 97. And the body renewed it in 99. And again in 2001. So, we took a look at those numbers. If you look at the tax and the generation, that dime in 1993 generated to the Oregon Health Plan about $28.5 million. That same dime today would generate approximately $18.4 million. That is the variation between the period of 92-93 and 07-08. You're having a major impact in terms of your tax structure. Another perspective, if you look back in recent years, 92-93 to 2007-2008, your tax has gone up about 321%. Your receipts are up about 175%. So the tax structure and what a penny generates in terms of a penny of tax is dramatically different today than it was, say, 10 years ago. In terms of cross-border sales, economists looking at the field of tobacco taxes will tell you that if there is a differential in the cost of tobacco, they use a $3.50 average. If there is $3.50 differential in terms of the cost of cigarettes, you will induce a high level of cross-border sales. So again, if Multnomah County, for example, chose not to impose a tax, Washington County did, you would have a great inducement for sales changing between those two counties. But what you also do, I think you dramatically disadvantage the non-taxed retailer at the expense of the taxed retailer. Look at the differential in terms of, again, the tax. If one were to take a hard look at the numbers between Oregon and Washington, currently you would suggest that Oregonians are far less healthy than Washingtonians. Per capita consumption in Oregon is somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 60 times higher than that in Washington State. And that, again, is used to exemplify cross-border sales. Mr. Chair, again, the problems with enforcement, the existing statutory construction of how we tax cigarettes, I don't believe 2616 is a workable solution. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Representative Bentz. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a, do you have a number on the economic value of selling cigarettes in Oregon that would be lost if we have these folks not buying in Oregon? We talk a lot about the tax, but I'm just curious about economic loss I almost hate to ask, because this whole line of questioning makes me uncomfortable, because I'm not in favor of smoking. But this is the Revenue Committee, and I am in favor of raising money. And I'm really trying to get at
it. It does make cause a problem for our thinking.
It does, right.
Mr. Chair, can I cut in? Can I just tell the representative to be very cautious what he says based on my experiences from Friday? So just let that out there.
You no longer want to soak the rich?
Never did.
Now that we have that clarified, yes, exactly. Representative Benz, back to your question.
I won't repeat whatever I just said. He caused him to say that. But my question to you is there an economic number you can share with us that you fear you would lose as a result of this vulcanization of the tax arrangement?
Mr. Chair and Representative Benz, yes, indeed. And I should have brought some numbers this morning. I don't have them. But will you have a dramatic impact in terms of the retail segment in the state of Oregon? Yes. Will you lose jobs? And the answer is probably yes. Not just tobacco sales. But one of the questions is secondary or sundry sales. Individual stops on a Friday afternoon, and he decides he's going to buy a six-pack of Coke and two loaves of bread and a pack of cigarettes. Will you lose those secondary sales? And the answer is unequivocally yes. And Mr. Chair and Representative Benz, I will try to get you a fairly good outline of secondary impacts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for this panel? We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Chair.
Very much. I have gone through my list. Are there others who would like to be heard on this bill today?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Gelser.
I just wanted to comment on Representative Benz's comment. I do think that this creates this whole circular series of questions that we have to ask for ourselves on this issue around how do we raise money, how do we protect the revenues of the state, and what do we do when one of those revenue sources is damaging to the people of the state. Personally, when I look at our tobacco tax revenues, I look at it as a public health policy, and anything that we can do to reduce the use of tobacco products by Oregonians is a good thing. And if it undermines our revenue collections, I think it just increases our responsibility here to find other ways to fund those programs.
Thank you. And I think that supports what I said a few minutes ago about the issue. Madison, you indicated that you may have answers to some of the questions that we've been asking. Do you want to talk about those?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for disclosure first, I do come from a family of physicians, but I'm the black sheep of the Kent family who became an economist.
That's very black sheep.
Yeah. And I do play one on the closed circuit TV on the Capitol, too. So for the purpose of practicing this profession, there are several things that came into question. One of them is the issue of would the sales or taxes in one place affect the collection total for the state. And the answer is actually it depends on, first of all, of how high is the tax, and then where is the tax. So Multnomah County, probably if they go high enough, they would drive people to go other places to buy. In that sense, because of the proximity of geography, they could either go to Washington County, which is pretty close, or to state of Washington. Either way, Washington would be happy. The interesting thing, of course, with these issues is just like when you have the federal tax. When you have the federal tax, you have a big blanket, and the system is always balanced. 61 cents, everybody's going to pay it. It's going to bring the price all together. In this case, it resembles when the states increase their taxes without the federal tax, with the leakages.
It always reminds me of an area I go and visit Indiana every once in a while. There's a place called Michiana, right? It's between Michigan and Indiana. And cars kind of line up and buy cigarettes and it's a very pretty sight. You might start bringing that kind of tourism to and see it more. So that is the likely thing to happen. However, the state might not lose much, because if it's closer to Washington County, and also the impact on reduction of consumers or smokers might not be as great either, because you have not necessarily stopped the prevalence because of the high. What you have done is just made people buy smokes, cigarettes, if you will, or other tobacco somewhere else. This is the same thing that we had with cigars at one point. Cigars, when we had 65%, then there came a time when we had to cap it at 50 cents per cigar. Not necessarily because if people were stopping smoking cigars, but they were smoking cigars somewhere else, or buying their smokes somewhere else, but they still smoke. So the issue it depends on all the revenue needs for the different counties and the cities and so on. Is it a good thing for them? It probably is. Is it going to pose challenges in the collection system? That would be definitely something to figure out. It is now we collect at the distributor's level. How far down do we go down to the retail level? I mean, and it's not necessarily something hard these days. It's easier these days than it used to be when we started the taxation system in the 60s. So that could be done. However, if you're still doing it at the distributor level, then you would have to add certain complications with the distributor. If you want to keep it cheap in order to get the revenue, if that's the revenue you're looking for, you want the collection cost to be cheap or low. And if you add requirements for retailers or wholesalers, you need to somehow find a compensation for their costs. Otherwise, it becomes ineffective for them to do so. So some of these questions, and then one question is about the issue of less costs for the health system versus economic loss. I mean, those are the issues that what we call externalities, and we do economists have brave souls. We do put dollar signs on them, but it does not really mean that you could. You could virtually gain that much money just by doing it. In the sense, let's assume that there is a whole closed health system in the state of Oregon that pays one payer kind of system. So wherever you go, the same payer pays. And you reduce the amount of people who are using the system because of smoking. You have reduction in costs. Yes, that works. But we don't have that kind of system. And in the other way is, are you going to lose economically because of pushing it somewhere else? You might. I mean, it all these issues are something that you could explore if you choose to go this way. And it will be a great economic study, by the way, too. So these are the things that I remember. The one penny or what would each county get, it really depends on how high also they go. They might go 50 cents and get nothing, or very close to nothing, because of the leakage, if you will, from the system. So it depends how they structure their tax and how they collect it and the collection mechanism. All these things they have to think about if it comes. So the revenue impact statement for this bill would say... It's will have no numbers and will have kind of verbiage to it, rather than That's the things I remember that you asked about. And although I am the ex-smoker of the office, the new smoker is next to you. it's a tough thing to break from.
Yes, I think if I recall, there's a man living in the White House who has a similar problem. Thank you, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mentioned the tobacco settlement. Is it out of play when it comes to this kind of an issue?
Mr. Chair Bentz, no, I don't think so. There are the taxation by different jurisdictions will not impact the tobacco settlement. Because it looks at a whole, the state level kind, and I don't think the state level will suffer much, except that the of course, depending on the structure, if they drive to Washington. So, but in general, it only happens that tobacco settlement agreement terms are more concentrated on enforcement of equal enforcement, which allows for the participating manufacturers to maintain their ability to be an economic player or in the share of the market without their living up to the terms that they've agreed to impacting them negatively, while it's not impacting the other guys, if you will.
Yeah, Representative Call.
Yes, thank you, Mazen. Just briefly to kind of dig down to the externalities question. I understand that looking at the entire healthcare system and the cost of smoking on that system, that's too many variables moving at once to probably get a firm handle on it. But if we were instead to do like the state epidemiologist did and simply cue to the Oregon Health Plan, to those people who are accessing the system through a statewide program, and look at the healthcare costs to the state of Oregon through that program as a result of smoking, don't you think we can get to a firm number of what it costs the state of Oregon in tax dollars through the administration of that program to actually deal with the health consequences of smoking?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Carl, I think you could. Remember, economics is the science of assumptions. So we could have a lot of assumptions in place and get to a lot of numbers. The problem with that is how immediate it is. So if you smoke today, does that mean you are going to have a utility from the health benefit or the health plan tomorrow or the day after? I mean, that's the relationship that you're going to have to build in order to find that correlation that is solid enough to make that conclusion. If you smoke for 6 years, let's say, I mean, these are the type of things that you're going to have to assume. You are going to require Oregon Health Plan services in 12 to 15 years. Well, I don't know. I mean, these assumptions take a lot more. It's more on the average, which is not a bad thing, but it has a lot more, as they say, that no one is the average exactly. But the those assumptions need, and they're also temporally postponed, if you will. So it is not something that you would pay for today and consume tomorrow. That what you pay for today might not be consumed until it's, if you would think about it, it's almost the closest taxation type to it is Social Security. You pay today, you consume it in the future, and you might and might not, because you might not live long enough to do it. But that's the type of relationship that this would probably have to it.
Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a study that shows us for every penny someone else raises the cigarette tax, the cost to the state revenues?
Yeah. You mean if you raise a tax, it reduces the yes, there is. Well, actually, there's plenty of costs. And we do use these models, too. We have the assumptions that we look at. We used to use 0.5 elasticity numbers in the past. And as we observed and with time, there came a time where the elasticity became higher. It's at 0.6 at what we use at this time.
So,
yes, please.
Can you explain that? 0.6 of what?
0.6 of consumption. Every 1% increase, or let's say every 10% increase in price, there will be a 6% decrease in consumption, which is for every 1%, 0.6%. So it's and in that sense, in economics, they would call it inelastic. The point of elasticity being 1, or what we call unitary elasticity. So anything below 1 is inelastic, and over 1 is elastic.
Oh,
please, go ahead.
Of course, unless we knew which city it was and what volume of people involved in the tax, the new tax, we could apply your model to that number. So the Multnomah County, for example, we could apply that model to that county and make some assumptions and then work back to the impact on State of Oregon revenues.
Well, Vice Chair Benz, and here what we have to see, first of all, how much it is. And is it going to be enough to send people driving 1 or 2 or half a mile, or some people who would live on the border and just cross to the, let's say, leave the local thing, go to the 7-Eleven and on the two stores down or something. So is it because of that locality, let's say it brings, let's take an assumption, the city of Beaverton increases it by 10 cents. Is that the consumption in the city of Beaverton going to go down 6%? No, because of the openness and of the locality to movement, and it is so easy. So no, it will not, and that's why the local tax, it's probably not as strong in making that reduction as it would be the state tax, or for that matter, the state tax is not as strong in making that whole reduction as it would be the federal tax.
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, so then would you can you tell us if, as a revenue generating device, the cigarette tax is better administered from a state level and then allocate the collections to the cities than it is to allow each city to raise their own tax?
It's all good, Mr. Chair. No. In one hand, let's give you the economist thing. In one hand, it allowing the taxation to be high enough gives you the advantage of having lower costs of collection and gives you more uniformity and less places where you could leak the system, if you will. So there'll be a lot more ability to collect more consistently and get revenues in that sense flowing in more consistently. And it is easier to apply, easy to audit, easy to look at, and it's cheaper. If you do it in, and this is the same thing it would be, for example, a state tax versus a federal tax. Think about the same thing. If the feds were doing it, it's a lot easier for them or everybody to collect. They could do it at the highest level, and then they would send it everywhere else. However, the states do levy their own taxes. And it increases the cost of collection. I mean, that's almost inevitable to happen, but how far do they want to? How tight is the system is going to be? How much it's actually gonna generate? And by then, how much you're able to enforce it and audit it and so on financially and also and what kind of sideboards you're gonna put in? So you could design it in a way that is beneficial to the local governments. However, like all things, I would assume that some places would get very enthusiastic about this issue and start raising it to the point where it actually becomes counterproductive. that's almost going to happen. But that does not mean the rest of them cannot benefit from it. So it depends how you design it, how you come in agreement. There might be intergovernmental, local government, state type kind of agreement in the collection cost on who pays, who collects, how do we deal with this. And then it could be something that we could increase 10, 15 cents for just the cities and counties. And there are many ways that you could design this. However, most likely the most perfect design will not transpire.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. We appreciate the explanation. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2616?
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative Call.
We do have
one more bill I'd like to get to if we can.
I will be unbelievably brief.
Thank
I would
you.
Just like to. I think that there's an interesting way to look at this as well with regards to the local jurisdictions and their want to have the power to do this for themselves. I'd just like to put out there a hypothetical that to have the members of this committee think about how they would feel if the federal government and their reauthorization of S-CHIP and their increasing of the federal tax had decided as well so that they could secure a sustainable revenue to the federal fisc, decided to preempt the states from increasing their own tobacco tax. I think there would be many in this building who would be frustrated with the federal government that would have concern for its capacity to raise a tax and maintain that revenue stream to the detriment of the states. And I think that concern should hold equally true for our relationship as a state with our local cities and county governments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2616, open the public hearing on House Bill 2654. That's also yours, Dave?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill tries to clarify some of the unclear clauses in the statute. ORS 368-705-368-722 spell out use and apportionment of county road funds raised by local option taxes. Now, this bill is intended to clarify that a countywide local option tax imposed by a county for road improvement, repair, or maintenance, not the local option taxes imposed in general, will be subject to apportionment and compression dictated in ORS 368.710. And that's the bill's intention.
Thank you. We have one person to be heard, Mike Eliason.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Eliason, policy manager for Association of Oregon Counties. I'm just here to express my support for House Bill 2654. This should be a lot quicker and more boring than the last discussion, so I'll try to get through it really quickly.
Well, we're the Revenue Committee. We expect to be boring.
All right. This is, as was described, the bill just designed to clarify ORS 368.710, which is in the County Road Fund section of Chapter 368, which is the County Roads chapter. The reason this bill is needed is just to clear up a potential ambiguity that resulted from the passage of House Bill 3047 in 2007, which that bill cleaned up and updated the County Road Fund section. The way 368.710 subsection 1 currently reads now refers to any local option tax or levy under ORS 280.040 to 280.145, which is, again, the general section describing all local taxation for public improvements. Says that no less than 50% of the taxes collected must be apportioned to the cities, that could be interpreted to include any levy, fire district, school district levies. We just wanted to make clear that was not the intent, of course. It's been law for a long time, decades, that road levies would be shared with the cities, but not the other levies. So purpose of this fix is just to clarify the apportionment scheme listed in the County Road Fund statute, that it applies only to local option taxes related to roads.
that's pretty much everything, and be happy to answer any questions that might come up.
Thank you. Questions? So, just to make certain that I understand, this general statute was intended originally to get to the result that this bill actually does get to.
Right.
It clarifies that other local option taxes that are not for road improvements or repair or maintenance don't have to follow this scheme. They were saying it in the negative.
Chair Barnhart, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else on this? As far as you know, anybody opposed to this bill?
None that we've heard. Okay. This basically,
I would think that if
doesn't
cities,
change anything, it just makes it more clear that this only applies to roads,
right,
to county roads.
I would think that if the cities thought you were going to take some money from them, they'd be here to discuss that.
That would be my understanding.
Thank you. Anything else on this one? Thank you. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2654. Colleagues, after the first two bills, I thought we might run until 10, but we've managed to finish a little bit early, and with that, we'll adjourn until tomorrow.